This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley and I'm joined by Susie J. Goldsmith, writer, photographer, mentor and mum. Having had two TFMRs herself, she's all about how we can use creativity to work through our grief. Today we're talking about Christmas because that's where we're at in the time of year at the moment. But really this could be used for any of those holidays, any of those special occasions, any of those times where we're getting together with family, with friends, with neighbors, and it's meant to be happy. This time of year can be really hard for grieving families. And so we wanted to talk about some of the things you can do to look after yourself. If you're feeling very raw or tired, or maybe even numb, hopefully this episode will give you some ideas on how to honor where you are right now and hopefully help you to feel more at ease. So welcome to Susie. Really lovely to have you back.
Hi, Hayley. Thank you so, so much for having me back. It's wonderful to be here chatting with you. Yeah, really excited about our conversation today.
Yeah, I think let's talk about, I'm going to just mention Christmas for me right now. So I go through phases. So I lost Luna, it'll be 6 years in January. And some years are okay. Okay, I say okay, but you know, some years are okay and some years are harder. And I don't really have a rhyme or reason for that. It just is. And I would say about probably a week or two ago, I suddenly just felt it hit me, really. And I'm not sure that's just Luna. I think, you know, my parents have both died now. So, you know, there's Christmas holds a lot of stuff. Christmas is a real reminder, or any sort of holidays that are, you know, about big get-togethers and happiness and joy, celebration, really highlight who's not here. Yeah. And I guess I just wanted to acknowledge that I think for me, that's where the pain or the grief or the sadness sort of resides. It's in who's not here.
And it's a time of year where it kind of brings it all under the spotlight. It brings it all into focus a lot more. And I think I'm very sorry for all your losses. I think it is that sort of expectation that it should be a happy time, which can actually make it feel so much harder. Mm. I know for me personally, after my TFMRs, I had no trouble whatsoever watching sad films or reading sad stories. I actually felt kind of comforted by them. It was the happy stuff that I found the most triggering.
Yeah.
And Christmas, or this expectation of jingle bells, come on everybody, let's get out and let's enjoy ourselves. It's their most wonderful time. I just wanted them all to go away because it felt so mocking almost. Mm. And I found the happy times were the hardest, I think, when everybody else was happy. And I think, one of the things that was very interesting to me when you approached me about our chat today was just this idea of how do we get through it? How do we cope? How do we kind of create a Christmas that we can cope with, that we can stand to be in?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, reading your blog post that you did a while ago, I think there were some really good ideas in there to just, you know, because we can't make this better. We can't force ourselves to, it's the most happiest time of the year. We can't force ourselves into that, really. Or I believe if you try to, you're probably going to not do yourself any favors. So it is about honoring where you're at and trying to maneuver in this space. Yeah. And I thought there were some good ideas in that. Mm. Do you want to just sort of pick out the one that comes to mind?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. The simplest one that everybody can get on board with is, I think, just starting with a kindness, you know, and whether that's kindness to yourself, treating yourself with, you know, self-compassion, or if you feel strong enough, finding ways to be kind to other people. I found that incredibly helpful when I was so consumed with, you know, my own feelings. I didn't even want to think too much about how I was feeling. You know, just finding small ways to just try and pay a kindness to somebody else was really, really helpful. And in fact, actually today I saw there's a charity called Aching Arms. Do you know Aching Arms?
Yes, yeah.
So they're running this thing at the moment to donate a bear for, you know, for Christmas for somebody. Now, I received one of those bears for Charlie, my first TFMR, and it was such a small thing to be in the hospital. And I, you know, I was going through this, all these terrible feelings and facing this reality of having to give birth to my little boy, spawn sleeping, 23 weeks. And suddenly one of the midwives came in and she said, "We have a bear for you. I know it's not much, but somebody who's also lost their child wanted to donate a bear." And I slept with that bear for months.
Yeah.
For months.
I've got a bear for Aching Arms as well. And it, same sort of thing. It just, yeah, it just gave so much comfort, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, when I felt strong enough, I donated a bear myself. Mm. And it did, it just lifted me. And I think one of the things that I came across when I was writing the blog post was this research from, I think it was Emory University. They did a study and they showed that the brain activity that they recorded when people were kind, it triggered the same association with pleasure and reward. Mm. So I found that really interesting because you're kind of tricking your brain into kind of releasing the good feelings.
Yeah, no, I was, so I'm training as a psychotherapist and on Monday this week, I was at the uni and we were doing some learning around neurobiology and neuroscience. And one of the things that they talked about to sort of help with soothing the nervous system, and one of the things was acts of kindness, along with getting out in nature, along with painting and write, you know, all these sorts of creativity elements too. But one of them was acts of kindness. Being kind really does. They soothe the nervous system. And so, yeah, I think if you're really struggling with your grief, and we know that with TFMR, there can be high anxiety, possibly PTSD, you know, these are things that are activating our nervous system and making us not feel very good. You know, anything we can do to help maybe soothe ourselves is worth giving a try. And I do agree with you. I think those bears are really lovely. And I also donated one when I felt a bit stronger as well.
Yeah, I mean, just worth mentioning them. Anyway, just for the amazing work that they do.
I'll put them in the notes as well if anybody thinks, oh, that sounds like a nice idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really simple way just to kind of lift out of your current sort of mood, I think. But yeah, I mean, thinking about, you know, these kindnesses and also extending them to yourself as well, that idea of self-compassion. I think Christmas is so full of shoulds, isn't it? I think
yes.
I should go and do this. I should be doing this. I, you know, the expectation.
I should have matching pajamas for everyone in our household. Oh, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does surprise me. I'm sort of like, I don't really understand this thing. But anyway.
Christmas Eve box, all of that, you know.
Yes.
And even like, you know, I tell you, because when I had my second TFMR, it was about 2 or 3 days before Christmas. And I was due to go and visit my family on Christmas Eve because it was my eldest daughter's birthday. And because we had all these plans in place and I didn't want to let anybody down, I went. And honestly, it was 2 days off the back of surgery because I had a surgical procedure the second time round. And I should not have been there. I should have been at home under my duvet. And I wish that I had been strong enough to say, "I'm sorry, everybody, I just can't make it." But I forced myself to go, and it was just, it was hellish, really, you know, those few days. And a couple of my friends announced on Facebook that weekend that they were getting engaged. And again, it was that happiness that it was like a twisting of the knife.
Yeah, it's a sort of, I got the sense of like, how dare you?
How dare you?
And how dare you? It's not rational, people. Like, this is not a time for rational thinking. It's just, you're in deep grief and pain, and it's how dare you.
Yeah, and normally I would have been happy for them, but under these very specific circumstances, I was not. And I, you know, they'd already had their own successful, happy, healthy pregnancy, and now they're getting engaged. How dare they? And I'm in this space. I'm not in my own home. So I felt like I couldn't even react how I wanted to, because I was with family and I was under all this pressure to be the dutiful daughter. And it was very horrible. And so I would say to anybody who is feeling like, oh, I've got to go and do this, I would just say, please, just say no. Yeah. Give yourself permission to say no to whatever it is that makes your chest feel tight. If that's how it's making you feel, then put some boundaries in place, because you're the only one that can do that.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's that two things of being, you know, kind to yourself and self-compassion. Mm. Setting boundaries is a way of being kind to yourself. Mm. And grieving is exhausting. Then you add in something like Christmas, something like where there's lots of people and things to do and places to be, and it can be extremely depleting, and you can't sit there with a smile plastered all over your face the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're going to be in a nurturing environment where the people around you are going to take you as you are, then fine. You know, that might be helpful to be cooked for and to be looked after in that way. But if it's the feeling pressure to plaster the smile on your face, which it sounds like, Susie, there was an element there of that, you know, that's maybe not right for you.
Completely agree with everything you've just said there. Yeah, there should be a kind of footnote, as you've just very eloquently explained there. Yeah, some people have those kind of families where they're, you know, the arms open and they're just into the fold, and mum is like there to, you know, give the hugs, and that's great. If you have that, then absolutely go to that space. But not all of us have that, definitely. No. And for me personally, my family is not great at really sort of saying how we feel and being open and honest, which is probably why I wrote my book, because I had nobody else to talk to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's mention, since you mentioned the book, just why don't you give us the title? I will put it in the show notes as well. But yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So it's called The Rallying Cry. The hardest parts of life through creativity. And it kind of came about because, well, after my first TFMR in 2015, I had all these huge feelings and didn't really know where to put them. And I did at the time think, I really should write a book. And I think it was around the time where Elle Wright wrote about Teddy, her little boy, the loss of him. And I kind of thought, oh, I've missed the boat. You know, she's done a fantastic job there. There's no need for me to write a book. And then I had my second TFMR and I was like, oh, this is it. This is so painful. Like, if I don't do something with this, then it sounds weird, you know, to think of it like this. But I really felt like I can't just be left with all this sadness and all this grief and all this pain and not turn it into something. That was really my main motivation for doing it. I was searching for a way to feel better. And, you know, I'm a photographer, and so I was naturally kind of leaning into my creativity a bit more. And my photography style shifted from a very kind of light, sort of airy kind of style to much darker. And I found it very comforting. And I thought, if I feel this from doing this, other people must feel this way too. And then I became a bit like a dog with a bone. I was sort of searching for other people's stories. And that in itself is the great thing about creativity. It's that none of us are that unique, really. Mm. We all share the same kind of things that we go through. And when you use creativity in a way to kind of express yourself, you inevitably open yourself up to discover other people's stories. And it's that connection which is very healing.
Yeah.
So I just found creativity to be magic and healing on so many levels. And so I just decided I'm going to write a book about this, and I'm going to keep researching. I'm going to keep finding out as much as I can about other people's experiences of it. And yeah, so the book was born. So it's a little bit about my story, and then it kind of goes through, you know, how I believe kind of creativity is helpful to anybody who's kind of going through, you know, the hardest times in their lives.
Yeah. And what I liked with your book is at the end, once you've sort of weaved your story through this, you know, creative self-care bit, at the end, you've got some hints and tips and things to try that people can try to get their creativity flowing. And the other thing I really liked about the book and about, you know, you write about this even on your, you know, on your Instagram and whatnot, is that there's not this good or bad at creativity or at writing or drawing or painting or taking photographs. That's not the point. It's not about that. It's about getting yourself into another sort of plane, if you like. And again, I'll go back to the neuroscience bit about when your nervous system is on high alert, doing creativity, having, you know, an outlet in that way, it changes the way our brain is focusing and functioning. And this has the effect of calming the nervous system. So don't worry. That's what I really liked about what you were, you know, saying in that book, was don't worry about this being quote unquote good. It doesn't matter. And in fact, actually, inherently, it will be good. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's about what it is for you. It's not for anyone else. It's for you.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, you know, they love to say, and people do tend to say, oh, I'm not creative. But that's because they're kind of confusing creativity with an ability, whereas creativity is not a skill, it's a habit. You know, there's no relationship. Like, you can be artistically skilled, sure, that comes with practice and creativity is just about the habit. It's about
Well, then humans are inherently, we are all creative. Absolutely. We are creative beings. And it doesn't have to be this picture that's gallery worthy. That's not what this is about.
And when you create these safe spaces to fail, you build, you naturally build your resilience, which is what I found so, so helpful about creativity, because my resilience was on the floor after my losses. I was so broken. I mean, I don't like to use that word broken, but we all know what I mean when I say that. But I would go into shops and my voice would literally be a whisper. I felt so afraid everywhere. And I found that creativity allowed me to kind of be a little bit braver, a little bit courageous, you know, every day in a safe way. You know, it's like if you're kind of crocheting a doily, you know, who cares if it goes wrong? It doesn't matter. But what you've done there is you've given yourself this safe space to fail, you know, and get it wrong. And, you know, nothing bad can happen when you go wrong with your doily, with your crocheting.
Yeah.
You're still alive, but you've just kind of proved to your brain that you can do it and you can survive it. And, you know, and that's actually quite helpful. And it's a very gentle way to do that and to learn that, I think. Like you're saying, all the science around it, I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's a very, you know, there's the other part here where if we are feeling just a bit wrung out and overwhelmed by this whole time period right now, then, you know, being able to, you know, I'm going to be making some fruit pom-poms with my son over this weekend, and doing something like, people are going to be like, what the hell is a fruit pom-pom? It's a pom-pom. It's a pom-pom that looks like a piece of fruit, like a strawberry, for example, or a watermelon slice or something like that. And sitting down and doing something like that, it's also quite distracting. So if you are feeling a bit overloaded and overwhelmed, doing something with your hands and making something, creating something, just takes you away from these pressing, overwhelming feelings.
It takes you out of your head and back into your body, kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I guess, you know, depending on, so people may be, so for my background, you know, we found out about Luna just before Christmas that there was an issue. And so Christmas for us at that time was holding our breath, really. It was a really odd feeling, and being with family, and we were kind of going through the motions of Christmas, and it was just odd. Yeah. So now Christmas still holds a slightly weird time of like, oh yeah, this time 5 years ago we were doing X and this and that, and you hold that You remember these things. So, and there might be people listening that are maybe just finding out that something's not quite right. And there may be awaiting further tests. There might be people like you, Susie, who have maybe just had their TFMR or about to have it just before Christmas, or maybe they had theirs back in June or, you know, whatever, but you're at different places of this space. And so you're going to kind of come at it from different angles, depending on where you are in that.
Yeah. So whatever, yeah, people need to do, it's going to be totally different for everybody, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
What feels right for one person or family is going to feel totally inappropriate for another. And yeah, you have to think about, yeah, creating something that you can stand to be in for the entirety of the Christmas period, I think.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm also thinking is that you may want to change up some of your traditions as well. You know, if you had certain things that you did every Christmas, something that I found kind of helpful was to think about, well, actually, maybe we'll just do something different this year.
Love that. Yeah.
So again, that's sort of using your creativity in a slightly different way. So this is about just changing up the dynamic, the space. Maybe you go somewhere different. So if you're used to going to other people's houses for Christmas, maybe actually you stay home for Christmas. That was actually more my thing, that I kind of went, actually, I just want to stay home for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, and then I'm happy to go to somebody's house for Christmas Day or Boxing Day. Even we did do that, actually, just stay at home for Christmas Day, and then Boxing Day go to family. So that took a bit of the pressure off as well. I guess I'm a bit of a homebody when I'm just feeling a bit low.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
being in my home with my husband and Benjamin, our son, that feels less trying.
Yeah, the idea of kind of creating your own rituals, and yeah, I think I'm definitely better at it these days. One piece of advice, which I think is helpful to perhaps pass on, is to think about what Christmas really means to you and focus on that.
Yeah.
And stay true to it, you know, be honest with yourself, you know, and that could be just as you say, like just staying at home. I love just now just being at home, just, you know, my little family, and just closing the doors and making paper snowflakes with my eldest daughter. I really enjoy that. And that's enough for me. And I'm definitely better at just kind of making sure that that is the priority. I think, you know, Christmas is, it, for me, it's there's almost like the two polar opposites of consume or create.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a tendency, as I'm sure most people do, you know, it's very easy to indulge in the kind of numbing behaviors of consumption, whether that's scrolling on Instagram, consume, 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 or eating, you know, anxiety eating, whatever, spending too much, you know, on gifts and things like that. So I always try and think, well, what, you know, rather than just consume, consume, for me, what makes me feel better is doing the opposite, which I see as, you know, creating things. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, like you were saying, like the making of the pom-pom fruit, you know, for our listeners, like what little rituals could you create for yourself? Some new traditions, like we as a family, we have baubles that represent each of our lost babies.
Yeah.
And we don't even have to explain them to anybody else. It's not like they're very sort of obvious, or they're very subtle. And which, you know, my eldest, she, now she's six, but she wouldn't even notice them necessarily. If I don't feel comfortable talking about them with her, I don't have to. But we still get real joy out of hanging them and just there. And that is a tradition that we have ourselves, which feels very special. And we've just created that. It's a very simple thing. There's a really lovely quote, which I'm sure you know. I think it's by an author called Jamie Anderson, who says that grief is love with nowhere to go. And so I think that when you create these traditions where you can honour your children, especially your lost children, you know, grief suddenly has somewhere to go, doesn't it? And you've created that. It's creativity helps you kind of find a space for your grief to go. I mean, when we started at the, you know, the start of the podcast, we touched on one of the other episodes that you had recently with Buff, I think her name was.
Yes, yeah.
And it was the Creative Self-Expression podcast, which I absolutely loved listening to. And she said a quote which has really stayed with me over the last few weeks. It was so good. I thought, oh, I wish I'd thought of that. I could have written it in my book. But I'm going to say it here because, again, it's this kind of like, you know, what do you do with your grief? And I really personally believe that, you know, being creative, finding these outlets through creativity is so helpful. And she basically said, creativity offers you a safe container to pour the darkness into. It's a transference of energy. So instead of it swirling in your mind or staying stuck in your body, it's coming out. And I just love that. So it can be, you know, a poem or a piece of art or a photograph, or it can be making a decoration with your child's name on it. And you've done something there to transfer that energy. And I love that. A succinct way of putting it.
Yeah, no, she was great. Really eloquent, talking about her grief and how she, you know, how she's worked through it and continues to work through it. Thank you for mentioning that. And I think, you know, this is what we're talking about. Like, this creation part can happen in a lot of different ways. And actually, something that might be really helpful, not just creating, you know, a piece of art, doing some painting, but doing something that can honor your baby or babies that have died, you know, you are then sort of cementing them further into your family. Mm. They become a part of your family even more. And I think that I remember with Luna, you know, like at the beginning, after we lost her, thinking, how am I going to do this? And there was a real need. There was a real desperate need for me to feel and for us to feel like she is a part of our family. Mm. And I think, you know, we don't know how to do that. You know, we think about children who are here and alive and living, and people see them, and that's part of them being recognized and here as a part of our family because people can see them. And so my big fear was, well, people can't see her. Mm. You know, very few people actually saw her, and she's not here. So how are we going to do that? And I think, you know, being able to create decorations or certain family traditions or rituals around Christmas or around any sort of certain holidays and celebrations, that's a way of doing it.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
And it can be really soothing doing those things.
Really soothing. And it can be the similar sort of things that you do on their, you know, the anniversary of their death. Well, you know, if you want to go outside and light sparklers instead of letting off balloons or whatever it may do on the anniversary of their death, then do it, you know. And you say it can be soothing and it can be beautiful, and it's a really, really healthy thing, I think, to do.
Yeah, really important. Mm. One of the other things that you talked about in that blog post, which I thought this is good and difficult, I'm going to say, because I think depending on where you are in this place and this timeline or whatever we want to call it, planning nice things ahead. So into the new year, because Christmas is hard, and then I don't know, I think sometimes I find new year harder, because for me this is another year away, you know, another, it feels, you know, you can get into the spiral of like it's another year of time and all this kind of thing. There's a way of sort of flipping that, really. But, you know, what I really liked was this idea of planning nice things into the future. So you've got something to kind of get to.
Yeah. I mean, I possibly might word it slightly differently rather than sort of saying planning nice things, because I always think nice things kind of conjures up this image of sort of bubble baths and face masks and stuff, which, you know, as we know, like self-care for those of us who really need it is like so much more than that. But definitely, I you know, thinking of planning for an intentional year, you know, an intentional year.
Okay.
Where you're kind of like, for me, I feel best when I can see not a goal, but something a little bit more gentle than that. Like something like, how do I want to shift, you know, myself in one direction or another? Or what would I like to change for the next year? You know, again, like letting go of things that aren't making me happy. Or if there's something that you sort of would like to explore, you know, in terms of your career or your work or your friendship groups or anything, it's about, I think, starting with that mindset shift, I think. Mm. So I like to see New Year as a chance to welcome curiosity in, perhaps. And so I'll be planning to read more. You know, my reading list will be getting it added at this point in the year. In fact, I added a book today, which I can't wait to dive into. And it's called, This Too Shall Pass. It's, you know, it's obviously about kind of grief and the transformation that can come with that, because that's what I'm so interested in. It's the transformation, you know, it's not just the sitting with the grief. It's the what next. And that is what we're talking about here with the year ahead. Ask yourself, what next? Where, if I could go anywhere with this blank slate that I've been given, my baby's gone, you know, the life that I saw in front of me mapped out isn't happening. Where can I go next? That's what it's about for me. So it's reading the books that spark my curiosity, maybe listening to some podcasts, and just finding time for the things that kind of tend to slip off the list a little bit.
So I'm really interested, because you're a busy woman.
Yes.
You're a very busy woman.
Yeah.
So how do you, please help me here, Susie, because I would like to do this more.
Yeah.
I've been talking to my therapist about this. How can I fit in a little more something like that for me? Because I'm like, honestly, this is something that, because I have to have, I believe in therapy anyway, but I've been having therapy for a long time now. But this is something I really have been working on for the last few weeks. Is like, right, I really need some time for me. And like you said, it's not really the bubble bath thing. Like, that would be nice. But really, it's actually something that's more nourishing. I think that's what you're talking about as well. Something that's it's a deeper nourishing of self, really. So tell me, Susie. Are you going to magic up a 24-hour day for me?
I cannot do that for you, Hayley. I'm afraid if I could do it for you, I would start with myself. It's not easy. I didn't say it was going to be easy.
Darn.
But I think there are things that you can do. I mean, for me, it's about, it's kind of scaling it down to the simplest version that you can manage with the time that you have. So like I write a letter every couple of weeks to my community of subscribers, and the one that's going out tomorrow is actually called When Your 10% is 100%, because Mel Robbins, I don't know if you know Mel Robbins, I quite enjoy following her on Instagram. She talks about, look, if you just gave something a 10%, that was all you could manage, you just gave 100%. And I like that, because I think what I'm trying to say is, often we don't do things because we say, I can only manage like this tiny moment of time. So what's the point?
Yeah.
I try to not say that to myself. I try to instead just scale it right down to the simplest version of whatever it is that I want to achieve. So that particular letter that I sent out, I set a timer and I set it for 30 minutes. And I said, I'm going to write almost like I'm drunk running down the street. And then I'm going to press full stop at the end of it. I'm going to give another time to edit it very quickly. And then I'm just going to press send. And I'm going to tell my followers that's what I'm doing. Because if I don't, I will not send this letter. And I will feel a little bit less like me because I haven't sent it. So I'd almost rather just do it with this tiny moment of time that I can wrangle than not at all. Photography as well is another example. So I had my youngest 16 months ago, and I found that I could no longer pick up my big camera and take it out with us and, you know, upload the photos and edit the photos. It was just too much. So I got very sad about that. You know, I kind of saw my little yellow balloon of creativity float away and out of sight. And I felt very heavy hearted because of that, because it was a real, it really helps me a lot just day to day. So I just started shooting with my iPhone more and more. And over time, it's just become a lifeline for me. So instead of this huge process of shooting with my big camera, I'm snapping with my iPhone. And it's actually now become a course that I've created, which I think I mentioned.
Yeah.
So I'm now teaching this photography course called iPhone Magic. And it's just now in the middle of its first run. And it is to help mums, women like us, who want desperately to find time to be creative and take photos. They can see the glimmer of their photographer's eye every now and then with the shots that they take. but they don't know how to sort of fit it into their days, and they don't know where to sort of start with kind of developing that. So this course is all about that, because I really want to help people see that whatever your creative dream is, it shouldn't be this huge, massive thing. It should start with the very smallest seed of your idea, and you should be able to slot it in. You have to be able to slot it in.
Well, I think that that's a really good example, because what you've just said there is that I wasn't able to take my big camera out with me. That was making me feel really sad. Mm. And so I switched to my iPhone. Mm. And as we know, we always have our phones on us and, you know, wherever we are. So, you know, you sort of shifted your gear, or you thought creatively about what you can do. So, you know, what exactly we were saying, I can't do this big thing anymore, but I can do this smaller thing, this more manageable thing. Mm. And then what's happened is that you've developed that and you've turned that into a course for other people to also learn from that. And suddenly something that was a grief, which was a loss, can't take my big camera out with me anymore, has turned into a new thing.
Absolutely. And it all starts
transformation.
And it all starts with just believing that something is possible, I think. Mm. And the creation of the course was hard, because obviously I've created this 2-week course. And the way that I managed to do that was planning everything down to the minutiae, you know. Mm. So it's like I couldn't just rush in and sit down for, 3 days and write this course. I had to really take my time and do a solid plan, which I actually used some online software to help me just brain dump the ideas. And you know, I can be standing in the queue at the school gates and I can be brain dumping into my project software, and so basically once I have my plan, I then have a framework which allows me at any point in my days to pick off a task. Let's say my youngest has gone down for 20 minutes and I know she's going to be up in 20 minutes because she's got silent reflux. I will pick something that is 20 minutes and I just can keep chipping away in the smallest way possible. And it is hard, you know, it is hard. And I think if I wasn't passionate about it, maybe it wouldn't have happened, because it's that discipline, I think, that kept me coming back to the course creation. So you're asking, you know, how do I fit in that time for me? I would say, well, how badly do you want it?
Yeah.
Because there is always ways, you know, it's just about scaling it down to the smallest version of your idea and just thinking, well, if I really want this to happen, come on, there's got to be some way to make it happen.
Yeah.
That's the honest answer, really. There's no easy fix. That's how I do it. That's how I try and do it. And now that course is done, I am glad it's done. I'm not about to make another course anytime soon. I will be running it again in spring because I'm loving running it. And, you know, the people on the course are just, it's great to see them lighting up and sharing their creative self-expression. But I'm happy now just to keep taking my iPhone photos for myself.
Yeah. And there's something there about, you know, you said about people getting together and the creativity, and being creative is very life affirming.
Absolutely.
It taps into your own life force. That's what you're doing. Mm. And when you are grieving, when you are experiencing maybe high anxiety after perhaps, you know, before or after, really, who cares, right? It doesn't matter where it's happening. You're high anxiety, you're grieving. It's a grounding sort of activity, using this creativity. Mm. And then if you can do it in a group, I mean, then you've got something, you know, quite magical, I imagine.
It's fantastic. And you're right. It's life affirming. It's grounding. And there's this really amazing YouTube clip from Ethan Hawke. I don't know if you've seen it. He's talking about creativity. Yeah. And it's basically this idea of, you know, no one is an island kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And creativity allows us to sort of see each other. And he says, you know, why do any of us need creativity? You know, why does it matter? And I don't care about Allen Ginsberg's poems or anyone's poems until I fall in love or someone dies. And then suddenly you need these words. And it's this idea of, like, when we share something creative, it's putting into either a picture or a turn of a phrase, something that is quite hard to explain, you know? And so we're suddenly able to see each other so much better and go, yeah, I felt like that, you know, even from like a moody silhouette.
Yeah, it's connection.
It's connection.
And I think in grief, we can feel very, very disconnected. And I think in TFMR, we can feel disconnected from our bodies. We can feel disconnected from those around us. We can feel disconnected from our partner, you know. And so being able to connect to ourselves, and again, about coming into your body, which might feel quite scary, depending again where you're at with this, but this is the way to start, you know. When after Luna died, it was like I scattered, you know, you mentioned the word broken. I mean, I think this is what I mean by broken is this sort of scattering. Mm-hmm. It's like you've sort of been blown apart, where you've sort of just everything feels all over the place. I felt all over the place. And so being creative is almost a way of gathering back up and connecting back to yourself. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you're able to sort of read a poem that connects to you, sort of connect to that human being who wrote it, even though you don't know them. I really do believe in its power. And we're talking also around this sort of post-traumatic growth as well. But I wanted to maybe bring in gratitude and difficult feelings around this time of year.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned it before about happiness around you or people being happy. And, you know, again, studies have shown that being able to find some gratitude, it helps us. And that can be really difficult.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I think that, yeah, talking about gratitude, it can be quite easily confused with positive thinking.
Yeah,
I think.
I agree.
And that's where I tend to, you know, shy away from talking about it too much online, because I don't want anybody to feel like I'm encouraging them to just gloss over all the terrible things that have just happened. Because look, you've got a beautiful sunrise in front of you. It's not about that. It's, for me, gratitude is, it's, yeah, it's not just finding joy in the beauty of the world that we live in. Of course, there is that. But my gratitude works best when I can be thankful for the people that have helped me on my journey, or the kindnesses that I, you know, see in the shops or in the streets that might go unnoticed otherwise. It's just a moment to reflect on them. And writing them down, you know, if you're somebody who, you know, gratitude journaling is a thing. I don't tend to write them down, but I definitely give myself a moment or two just to reflect and be slightly thankful, I think, for the good things that do come my way. Because if I don't, then it's very easy for my brain to kind of spiral into the darker places.
Well, to give people a little more on the neuroscience here, our brains are wired to find the bad, quote unquote. That is our species' way of protecting and surviving. So we will dwell more on the bad. We will hang more on the bad. When the good things happen and the happy things happen or the joyful things happen, we just don't tend to notice it. We kind of go, oh, yep. And then we sort of move on. We can focus very easily back onto the really bad thing. Now, TFMR is one of the most life turning upside down, painful things that can happen to a person. So, of course, you're going to be there in that state for a while, and it may be difficult to sort of see when the good things happen. But I think, Susie, what you're talking about is really important, because even in the really difficult moments, there may be a really kind midwife, for example. You know, and I've heard people say it. I've listened to so many people's stories by now that I've heard them talk about, oh, the one midwife who came in and held my hand, I was so grateful for her holding my hand in that moment, you know, or a doctor or a neighbor or whatever. And it usually is people, I have to say, in those really excruciating moments. Again, it's this connection thing.
Yeah.
And it's people. It's something people are usually expressing something about, a gratitude towards a person that was especially kind or just there for them, or they could really feel the others, not just empathy. it was more than that. Mm. You know, it was a real deep compassion, human connection. And I think that's, even if you're listening to this and you are like, the bomb has gone off or is about to go off any moment, then yeah, it's those moments of human connection that can be so...
Well, they're the light in the dark, aren't they?
They are. Exactly. I was about to say they are the lifeline.
Yeah. And yeah, it's that light in the dark that we all desperately need, I think, when we go through these awful moments. And, you know, in terms of gratitude, taking a moment to write them a Christmas card, maybe, or something, you know, a message to them. They will understand your ramblings in your card far better than your friends who you're trying to talk to and explain all this stuff that you've gone through. You know, a few words in a card is going to help you feel so much better, I think, than trying to explain what you've been through over a pint at the pub.
You know, and again, actually, you know, just as you're saying it, I'm thinking, you know what, this is one of those things that there just sometimes isn't the words. And really it is, if there has been a person that you haven't had to say very much at all, and they just they just look you in the eyes, or they hold your hand, and you know without any words if they understand and they get it.
And that's such a relief, isn't it?
It is such a relief. It is such a relief. And I'd like to say, there, you know, most people that I've spoken to, there is somebody that has been able to do that. It's really important. And I guess, you know, if you're a little bit further down the road, like I'm thinking of myself now, because I'm 6 years now, there'll be moments where I sort of take myself off in a quiet way, or my husband and I will have a bit of a moment. Or I think it's a little bit, so I'm just thinking a little bit further down the line now, then what tends to happen is most people sort of fall away into the woodwork. They don't really make mention of Luna. So, which is sad.
Yeah.
Which is sad, but that's where your family rituals become even more important, that you know you are, you remember.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be in a way. And we can't expect, I suppose this is what I'm, you know, I'm trying to sort of forgive people, because it's very easy to feel cross or hurt when they don't remember, but we just have to accept that our babies won't ever mean as much to other people as they will to us. And so, like you say, this is why it becomes super important for you to find your own ways to honor them in whatever feels appropriate, I think. And it's entirely possible, I think.
I think the other part here is that we have, and I think we are touching on it here, is that there's the gratitude piece, and we hold the word gratitude lightly here. As people are listening, we hold that word lightly, because really, I mean, whenever I think about gratitude, I know that there's the opposite side here. There's the yin and the yang here. And I think that is, for me, gratitude and difficult feelings, uncomfortableness, maybe this feeling of anger towards other people for being happy and joyful at this time of year when that is not how you're feeling, and how to hold those things with some grace is the word I'm gonna say.
Do we need to hold them with grace? I mean,
maybe not.
I think, yeah, personally, I think that yes, you can hold space for gratitude, but you can also really allow the difficult feelings. For me, it's absolutely essential. And I, in my own family, you know, I've had people like accuse me of being a bit maudlin at times, but I don't care, quite frankly, because without it, I feel terrible. Without talking openly about my feelings, without allowing those feelings, I feel terrible. And one of the best things I heard on this, I think, was Elizabeth Gilbert, who, she's author of Big Magic, which is another, it's a great book on creativity and using it to kind of change your life, I guess. The magic of creativity. But she basically, you know, and on talking about grief, I think somebody was interviewing her. It was Fern Cotton, actually, on the Happy podcast. And Fern Cotton was saying, well, how do you stop grief from overwhelming you? How do you prevent it from just completely taking over?
Well, sometimes you can't.
He said, well, that's it. She said, yeah, you don't. There's the problem.
Yeah.
The pain is in the resistance.
Yes.
The pain is in the resistance. It's not the grief itself. It's that you're trying to stop it. So the minute you just say, oh my God, you put your hands up to this. I'm going to put my hands up to this. I'm going to let it just wash over me. I'm going to let it take me in the sea. I'm going to, you know, just give into it, see where it takes you. You will actually feel better than
I agree.
To force 100%. Yourself. It's the don't force the smile on at Christmas. It's don't go to that family meal that you don't want to go to and plaster a big smile on your face. There's the pain. If I'd stayed home that Christmas and wallowed and ate, you know, Doritos and all the things or whatever, you know, and take my photos and wrote some bad poetry, then I would have felt way better than, you know, resisting those feelings.
Yeah.
So that to me is what it's about.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. It's the, rather than fighting upstream the whole time, just let yourself float. Just let it take you where you want to go. And that's a very scary thing. I think this is the scary part around grief is, you know, you haven't experienced before and you don't know what it's going to do to you. And really in society, we don't really want to see people in their big feelings and crying. And it makes people really uncomfortable. They want you to pull yourself together because you're making them feel uncomfortable. Mm. And actually in grief, you just need to go there and it's nobody's died from crying.
Mm.
Nobody's died from crying. Nobody's died from screaming and yelling and wailing. I've done wailing.
Oh, I've done howling. Wailing and howling.
Yeah. Wailing and howling. Yep. It's a really, if you are feeling the urge for a sound to come out, let the sound come out.
Let's get guttural. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I completely agree. I mean, yeah. You kind of, for me, the healthiest expression is when I conjure up this image of like Italian women, you know, at funerals, and the way that they howl and wail. And I think it's just the best way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, UK, we've really got it. We've really got the raw end of the deal, haven't we, in terms of, you know, how to, it's the stiff upper lip, isn't it? And just, I mean, it's very hard to.
Yeah. Well, and you're so right. But the more it stays in, the more it stays in, the more pain it's causing. And it's like, excuse this expression, it's kind of really gross, but it's a bit like lancing the boil. We just need to let it out so that it can get out, it can drain, it can clear, and and you can then begin to have some healing taking place. And I'm not saying that there won't be another point where you need to howl and wail. There probably will be different points along the way. There will be.
Well, one caveat to that, though, I would say, is to find the space where you feel comfortable and safe to do that.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's
Sainsbury's probably not the best.
Sainsbury's
place.
Not the best, but yeah, exactly. And it's this, you know, who are you going to share with? Like, if you want to have a cry with somebody, go for it. But by all means, make sure it's somebody, or try to, you know, find somebody who you feel will, you know, you can trust them with your story, and that you can trust that they will be able to hold it in a way that doesn't make you feel that kind of emotional vulnerability hangover, because that's horrible as well. You know,
yeah.
So it's definitely do it, but I think. Think about, you know, how and where you're going to do it, and just let go.
Fiona, my producer, she's just put, what about the kids' carol concert? Can you imagine?
It could happen. It
could happen. Well, I actually
put a lid on it for so long.
I thought, and also, like, if your TFMRs have happened and you have children, either before or after, whatever, and you might get triggered. I mean, I find things like a kid's carol concert at the school, I find those sorts of things really quite tricky.
We've got nativity next week, and I'm I'm dreading.
Yeah. but you know, and then I thought, I find them tricky. And then I thought, gosh, you know, if they ask the audience to join in the singing, let's say, and you're feeling it coming on, it's like you could just make yourself the worst singer ever, and it just be this total outlet to just get out the feeling of it. But I mean, these are the difficult things of having to navigate this time of year that can be triggering, that can be really difficult, that you're seeing lots of other happy families. And I mean, the truth is, we don't know. Also, I just want to say, we don't know what's going on in other people's families. That can be really hard when you're early on in the grief. You just kind of don't care. and you just think, I just see happy and that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to think about what else is going on in their family. But I think later on, as things become less spiky, I think you do view life in a very different way and you notice certain things and you know that you don't always know what's going on in people's lives.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know about you, Susie, but I think I make less assumptions now.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. One of the nice things to come from all of my own experiences, I don't know how you feel about this, but I like to think that these days, I'm a pretty good safe space for somebody else. You know, anybody else going through horrible things. I like that I feel comfortable. I feel absolutely comfortable with whatever it is that they want or need to share. And I will let them know that I can be that person for you. And there's, again, that's that kindness, isn't it? It's the sort of, you know, I can be the person that I wish that somebody else had been for me, you know.
Mm.
It's nice because you...
Well, this comes back to the kindness thing. Of the kindness being able thing, to,
yeah. And it's not something that you can do when you're in the rawest...
No.
Age. Like, of course, if you this
and I would say you shouldn't really, because your energy should be focused on being kind to you.
But in a few years' time, you can, you know, it's like Brené Brown says, you know, one day your story will become someone else's survival guide, and that's the gift I think that we have to have from if you want to share it. But you can certainly, I think, be that ear for somebody else who's struggling, and that can be a really nice thing, I think.
Yeah, and. Like a nice round Christmas bauble, we've come back round to the beginning.
Oh,
we've and tied it up
we,
nice.
We just
like
it
a nice Christmas
this,
wreath. We've sort of tied it with a little bow on top. And so, yeah, with that, to round it off, Susie, what would be if people do one thing this Christmas, what would you say it should be?
I think it has to be letting go of the shoulds, you know, the expectations. Yeah. I think put on your own oxygen mask first. I just think you've got to do whatever it is that is going to help you, because you're the priority in this. You've gone through this horrible thing, this, whether it was, you know, 5 weeks ago or 5 months or 5 years. I just think you deserve to have a time of year where you can look after yourself and do whatever it takes to, you know, put something in place so that you don't struggle through this time. No one wants to see you struggle. So do whatever you need to, I think, to put yourself first. If that's not too rambly.
It's not rambly at all. No, it's really lovely. And the putting yourself first and not giving in to any sort of pressure if that's possible for you. And maybe that's if you have, you know, a partner with you that, you know, talking to them about that. So if you think that maybe you're going to struggle with the saying no or setting boundaries or being able to sort of say that's not quite right for me, maybe having that conversation with your partner and asking for their support in helping you to set those boundaries and to remind you of what those boundaries are.
That is a great idea. Yeah, because
being in it together.
Absolutely. You're so much stronger with somebody, you know, supporting you in that. And it does make it a whole lot easier. Love that advice.
Great. Well, thank you, Susie, very much for joining me. Really nice having another chat with you. I really appreciate it. And I know the listeners will as well.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure to come back and chat to you again. And I hope we can again in the future.
Yeah,
hope this
me
is
too.
The last time. Take care.
Take care. Thank you for listening. And we hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. This ensures you get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released. And you can find us on most podcasting platforms. Get in touch. We love hearing from you. Find us over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR and Twitter at Talk TFMR. And I know that I say, please take gentle care of yourselves at the end of every episode. But at this time of year, I really want you to take extra gentle care. Please be kind, as Susie says. And I'm really hoping that you can have a calm Christmas or find moments of calm. So that's all for this time. I'll see you, or you'll hear me, in the new year.